Disruption Zone. Opportunity lives where the status quo dies. Talking to the greatest innovators, disruptors, and off-the-wall inventors we can scrounge up. You laugh, you'll learn, you'll be inspired. Now, here are your hosts, Leland Conway and Cameron Mills.
3, 2, 1. Welcoming back to the Disruption Zone, one of our favorite legal experts is Loretta Powers. Loretta, how are you?
I'm doing pretty well.
It's good having you back. I've been checking in with you on some legal issues during the coronavirus situation. And one of the things that's come up is the issue of liability for businesses as we begin to reopen. And I think you and I were texting yesterday. There's already some rumblings of class action or civil action against businesses because somebody caught the coronavirus or whatever. And there's a few states, like I think Texas, that's trying to protect businesses. But when the government says, hey, you can go ahead and open back up, how will businesses protect themselves from being sued if somebody gets the coronavirus?
Good question. There's so many different things to do and there's so much to unpack. But like Mitch McConnell said, trial lawyers are sharpening their pencils to come after healthcare providers and businesses.
Right.
And he's hoping that Congress altogether will pass a law insulating all businesses and corporations from, quote, opportunistic lawsuits.
Right.
However, I think that there's already laws in place to prevent these sort of lawsuits. Successful negligence claims, to answer your original question, they require four essential elements: duty, breach, causation, and damages. If you don't have all four, your lawsuit is as dead as a doorknob. It will not see the light of day. It gets kicked out during summary judgment. And the duty refers to an obligation of reasonable care. Businesses and healthcare providers need to make sure that they're following national, state, and local provisions and recommendations. What a lot of people are fearful, if we give businesses kind of like a blank check to do whatever they want to, they're going to mistreat their workers and expose them unnecessarily.
Yeah, on principle, I really don't like shielding liability unless it's just shielding against frivolous liability. And you mentioned the four things there, and that kind of makes sense. My biggest concern, though, is that, like, under these circumstances, there are a lot of opportunists out there. And how do you even track where you caught coronavirus, right? Like, I mean, how can
Great
you even prove
point.
That?
That's what I've been saying all along. Like, I mean, we're already seeing those commercials, like, you know, call your personal injury today if you believe there's been an unlawful COVID-19 transmission, kind of like those mesothelioma ads that we're all tired of. But see, with mesothelioma, you could actually pinpoint it to workers on the job that were continually exposed to asbestos.
Right.
With COVID-19, you could get it from a doorknob.
Yeah.
Like, you never know.
Right.
Unless, of course, it is more akin to HIV transmission. Right now, there's a law where if somebody has HIV, they need to disclose it to their partner. Otherwise, they're facing criminal liability,
right?
Like, could be charged for manslaughter.
Right.
So I think if somebody has COVID-19 and they're out and about, they're licking doorknobs, they're hosting these extravagant parties, I think that's going to be problematic.
Yeah. I guess there's a difference between flaunting it, you know, because there have been people that have said, hey, I'm having a COVID party. But then again, people that go there, it's their choice. You know, I mean, you're also the one that's flaunting that if you go there, because I can see it, like, you know, when we track back food poisoning cases, for instance. My dad used to be a health inspector, and he actually tracked down several cases of food poisoning to specific restaurants. And in that case, you are able to find, sort of triangulate, okay, these 12 people within this county all got this virus, or all got this, you know, food poisoning. All 12 of them ate during the same 3-day period at these restaurants, right? But that's actually impossible to do, as you mentioned, with COVID, because you can literally catch it anywhere. And you can't even say, well, they all went to this grocery store. That doesn't really matter. You know, you don't know who their family is or what contact they had, or, like you said, what doorknob they licked. You don't know any of that, you know?
Exactly. I mean, you can pinpoint food poisoning cases.
Right.
You can't really with COVID-19. So out of curiosity, what are some of the foods that you avoid?
Right. Oh, for me?
Because for food poisoning purposes. I don't touch the fried rice.
Yeah. Well, you know what's funny is, do you remember the outbreak? It would have been early 90s. You might not have even been alive then. There was this huge outbreak of food poisoning that was, I think, tracked back to one of the fast food restaurants. I had eaten at that fast food restaurant. I'm gonna leave them out of this conversation, but because it's been so long. But still, I had eaten at that restaurant and I got deathly sick from food poisoning. After that, I could not eat a hamburger with mayonnaise. My dad, though, having been a health inspector, he wouldn't let mayonnaise in the house. He wouldn't let salad dressing in the house. And I always thought that was kind of funny because the cases that he tracked back always went back to somebody had an infection and they didn't cover it up on their finger. And then they put their finger in the mayonnaise, right? Like that. He literally tracked into that in one case. So he just wouldn't allow it, you know, and he would never eat anything like that at restaurants. But I always thought it was funny because I was like, but then later we started getting these outbreaks of E. coli and other types of food poisoning that were coming from lettuce. They weren't actually coming from those kinds of things. So yeah, it's weird. I have kind of strange food tastes as a result of growing up in a household where that happened. So
I bet. Yeah. Potato salad is also a very popular thing to get food poisoning from.
Yeah. Church potlucks are also a great place to get that because of that kind of stuff that they bring there. And they're always going to have potato salad there. So back to the COVID thing. I asked our state legislators in Kentucky in particular about whether or not there was something they could do on a state. And they sort of, they are not in session. So they're like, well, let's bump this up to the feds. You mentioned the feds. Is there a piece of legislation being worked on right now by the federal government that would provide some at least limited protection? Because, again, normally I'm not for shielding against liability. I think if you screw somebody, they should have a right to, you know, get recompense on that. But maybe under certain circumstances like this, in order to protect even the proceedings from ever taking place, could we lay out stringent, very specific, you know, ways in which this would apply so that you're not really shielding companies from abusing their employees or their customers, but at the same time, you're protecting them from frivolousness?
Exactly. Congress is working on something. I don't think a blanket, free check, do whatever you want, is going to pass. However, what will probably pass is insulating hospitals. Mm. Hospitals that don't want to do these quote-unquote elective surgeries, like somebody with a stage 2 breast cancer who needs a removal. And, you know, time is really of the essence of those.
Yeah.
If that were to progress while this COVID-19 is going around, and because she couldn't get operated on as soon as possible, I think that the government's going to do something to shield the hospitals from liability there, even though I really don't think you should. I mean, whenever it comes to that, they need those operations as soon as possible.
Yeah. Well, it blows my mind. Like, it literally blows my mind that a breast cancer surgery is considered elective. the moment you get that diagnosis, that becomes, I don't care whatever it is you have to do, I don't care how slow growing it might be, dude, you got to get that out right now. And the fact that they class that in some places as like something that would be elective, that blows my mind. I think we really did a lot of damage to our healthcare system in all of this. And that came from government officials.
Yeah, government officials who aren't doctors.
Do we have any recourse? Because this is a bigger question. Do businesses, because there's more and more evidence coming out right now that this lockdown should have probably never happened. Sweden is starting to completely come around the corner. Yesterday, the WHO of all people, who first didn't take this seriously, then took it too seriously, now they're back to saying, hey, Sweden has a great model, and they never even locked down. Could businesses hold in any way, shape, or form overbearing governors? Could churches hold overbearing governors for stepping in and assuaging their rights?
Unfortunately, the government was acting within its duties, and they're sovereign and immune for that. However, I do like the idea of what Germany did, and that's send a bill to China.
Yeah, yeah, there's some talk about that. I think they absolutely should. They were so dishonest about that. Well, worse than that, I think, in some cases. I encourage people to go listen to the episode earlier this week from we had Jordan Harris on, who's the former executive director of the Pegasus Institute, and we went really in depth into the whole China issue and why we're setting up an ideological battle. It'll be the new Cold War of our lifetimes, Loretta, and that is the fight between communism and the Western civilization is about to reignite. You know, and we're about to have that battle again. We had it with Russia in the 60s and 70s and 80s. Now we're about to have it with China, and there's a big tie in there. But anyway, that's enough promoting an earlier episode. There's another thing that's emerging, doesn't have anything to do with COVID. And while I have you, I'm gonna take advantage of this for a second. The FBI was apparently closing their case against Flynn, and it stop me if you haven't looked into this, but I'm just curious. They were closing their case because they lacked derogatory evidence against Flynn, former National Security Advisor Michael Flynn. And then Peter Strzok stepped in, apparently. This is news breaking today. And they didn't have the evidence. They were trying to close it. And he's like, no, we're going to keep this investigation open. What is Flynn's recourse? Because it looks like now his name's about to get cleared. And this whole thing with the collusion Russia investigation is about to fall completely apart. There were some really bad actors in here, Loretta, that were in government positions. Are they safe?
You know, I've never really heard of politicians using the legal system in order to further their political agenda. Just kidding. It happens all the freaking time. But, you know, with Flynn, I mean, at some point what they're doing is harassment.
Right.
And Flynn could definitely do something about that. But I think he's above it. He doesn't want to give more light to this fire. Yeah. So. Yeah.
Well, it's interesting. I don't know if you've seen, there's a new documentary or docuseries, I guess, on Netflix that we started watching last night. It's called Waco. And it goes back through the story of Waco. And that all started with Ruby Ridge. And I started reading up on this because this happened while I was very young. It was like 1992 or something. And in that case, apparently the FBI they entrapped a guy they kept approaching him saying, sell us some sawed off shotguns. And he kept saying, no. He contends to this day that he never sawed it off. And the FBI says that it's 1/4 of an inch below regulation. Anyway, bottom line is he won $3.8 million in a suit. So what is that difference? When is the government liable? When are they not? Because you mentioned sovereign immunity. In some cases, they have overstepped their bounds, and people have, because sovereign immunity doesn't cover everything. I mean, police get sued all the time. So what's the difference there?
Yeah, you already said it, whenever they overstep their duties.
Right. Okay. So they're going to fall back on the COVID thing and say, we were following within our duties. But can we make the case as a church? For instance, like let's say in Kentucky. I'm just drilling you today. Sorry. Let's say in Kentucky, they left liquor stores open. You could go through drive-through liquor stores, but they sent the state police to take people's license plates and then try to put them in forced quarantine if they went to a church service. Is it still you're in line with your duties when you're allowing people to go to the liquor store, but not, or, you know, to go through a liquor drive-through, but not go to an outside in the parking lot church service? I mean, to me, that seems like you're stepping outside the bounds of what you can do.
Exactly. And you're also violating their First Amendment right.
Yeah.
Kind of codified. I think the churches are going to win that lawsuit whenever it comes around.
All right. Well, hey, listen, it's always good talking to you and getting your legal advice on stuff. Thanks for your time today. We appreciate you.
Thank you. Have a great one.
Awesome. You too. Loretta Power. She's fantastic. Always has great stuff to say. We'll see where that case goes, but I think it's interesting. I don't know, man. If I was Michael Flynn, I'd sue the hell out of him. I would sue the hell out of Peter Strzok, and I would sue the hell out of probably James Comey and probably what was that guy's name that was in the State Department that his wife worked for? She worked for the group that had been contracted to do the dossier. I'm forgetting all the acronyms and names and all that kind of stuff. I'd sue the hell out of all those people for real. If I was Michael Flynn, as this begins to emerge, that very much it looks like. That he was, that Flynn did, they were losing their case. The FBI was. So anyway, I don't have all the details on this, but it's interesting. According to the Daily Wire, that's Ben Shapiro's site, they wrote that the FBI and one other unidentified government agency searched through their databases on Flynn and couldn't find any derogatory information on him. And that led to the Bureau saying, you know what, we're going to close this case out. And then following that, apparently the team that was being run by Strzok, I guess, decided to keep the case open. So that's going to be interesting to see where that goes, whether or not there's going to be a lawsuit there. This is all happening, interestingly, while everybody is completely distracted by the whole COVID thing. But let's go back to the COVID thing for a second. We're starting to see more and more information out there that the idea of completely shutting everything down was probably not the best idea. I think from the beginning, we could have done social distancing. I like what the grocery stores have done by keeping people 6 feet apart. You could limit the number of people in stores. You could limit the number of people in restaurants. We could. It was probably prudent to cancel like huge gatherings of people. But by and large, what needs to happen is herd immunity. And you're not going to get that until people are exposed to it. And this virus, they're showing it's the death tolls are not matching up to the estimations. The models are not working or not turning out the way that they said they were. And I'm not minimizing this or the deaths that have happened in it, because there have been, it is a serious virus. That's not my point. My point is we got to figure out a way to deal with this so that we can get America healthy again and we can get back to work. And I hope it's not too late. And I think we could have probably just practiced social distancing instead of shutting everything down. And everything probably would be, all things being equal, it would be equal today. So anyway, check it out and go back and listen to a couple of the podcasts that we've done, Dr. Paul Saladino and some others, because it kind of fills you in on the medical reasons behind kind of what I'm saying right there. But anyway, we'll see where all this goes. The bottom line is, I think we're about to start to reopen, and maybe that'll be a good thing. But I also think that, I guess, how do I put this? I think we're in for a rocky recovery. I think it's probably not going to be a V-shaped recovery. I hope I'm wrong. I really hope I'm wrong. We're up to 30 million jobs vaporized. I mean, that is unthinkable. This far surpasses, at least in this moment, anything that we had during the Great Depression. And the problem is, how do you bounce back from that when you're a consumer-based economy? Because all those 30 million people, they don't have economic means now. Then we can open up businesses tomorrow, but there's going to be 30% or 10% of the country that literally can't afford to buy anything. You know what I mean? And so when we look back on this, we're going to see that the experts overestimated everything, and that instead of handling, because here's basically what happened. Here's the breakdown. In the beginning, we had to do what we did. I get it. I even the first 2 weeks of the shutdown, I get it. You got to do what you do. You got to pause, take a breath, figure out how we're going to deal with this. But then once we started getting data in, our leaders were not flexible enough to react to that data. They held to the models, which were wrong, like they were a precious baby, and they wouldn't let those models go. And so we continued deeper and deeper and deeper into this economic morass. And now we're facing all kinds of things. We're facing meat shortages. We're facing grocery shortages as a result of disruptions in the supply chain. All of this could have been avoided had we been more flexible with the data as it was coming in, as opposed to hanging on to antiquated, outdated, wrong models that just weren't coming in right. So, again, I'm not trying to minimize this. Clearly, it's a serious virus. I mourn the loss of every single person that has been lost in this. But the bottom line is, we're going to find out when this is all said and done that the vast majority of people who died probably would have died this year anyway from another health complication like heart disease, diabetes, or the flu itself, right? And so the vast majority of the deaths that make those death tolls look so scary probably would have happened through another mechanism later on in the year. And I don't want to minimize that, because people are like, well, it was my granddad. I could have had six more months with him. No question. That's not my point. But my point is, you don't topple the world's economy for a tiny percentage in a case like this, because there is going to be more death and destruction. And I say is going to be, because we're past that point where earlier on I was warning where there might be. Now there is going to be more death and destruction from this economic collapse, which is essentially what we're living in right now, right? I mean, maybe we reopen, maybe everything comes back together, but my best estimation is that if we reelect President Trump in the fall, we will see a bounce back in the economy within 2 to 5 years. If we do not, it's going to be a 10 to 20 year project. maybe even longer. We may permanently be a third world country. If we elect, you know, a boob like Joe Biden or somebody else from the left, and I say somebody else from the left because I could very well see a situation arise where somebody else steps in because Biden's having all kinds of trouble with this accusation problem and the fact that he doesn't know what state he's in or whether he's got his teeth glued in or not. And I don't mean to make fun of the guy. He's just clearly suffering some form of like dementia. And it's sad, but it's sad that the Democrats are putting him out there to deal with this. You know, the guy should just go retire and, you know, spend the rest of his life in ease and comfort as opposed to trying to run the world's freest country and run it into the ground is what he'll do. If we elect somebody from the left, I think it'll end us. I don't think we'll ever recover from this. We very well may elect somebody from the left. I mean, we've created now the perfect welfare class. I mean, it's huge now. You got 30 million people that are now completely out of work. And, you know, you say the right words in today's atmosphere where people aren't thinking critically. And next thing you know, who knows what happens. But if we reelect President Trump 2 to 5 years, which is still a long time. I mean, I think we've done that much destruction. And the UN came out, the Reuters reported on this, that there was going to be probably hundreds of thousands of children who were going to die because of the increased poverty. You know, liberals like to bash our country for being so wealthy. And yet the very fact that we're so wealthy is why thousands upon thousands of people don't die every year in third world countries because of the aid and help and assistance that we give them. Well, if we're a third world country, we can't give that aid and assistance. And liberals don't like to think about that, right? Like our wealth benefits the entire world. Our wealth benefits the entire world. It lifts people out of poverty. And liberals never want to include that in their assessment of America. And as a result of us not having the strength of economy that we had before, we won't be able to help as many people, and thousands of people will die in destitution. And I think there's going to be death and destruction right here in the United States. A couple more weeks of this, and you're going to start seeing people go hungry. And when they go hungry, they're going to start breaking into people's houses. So anyway, I don't want to get into too morose or macabre or whatever of a discussion here. Let's talk about optimistic things, right? Let's be happy again. Let's just be happy that a lot of states are starting to open up, and now maybe the American ingenuity and the American spirit can get to work on this, if there's anything left of it, and put things back together. So let's hope that that becomes the case. You know what? I will tell you this. Hit me up on Twitter. It's at Leland Show and at Zone Disruption. We're on Instagram at Great Lelando and at The Disruption Zone. Hit me up on Twitter. What are you going to do when the whole stay-at-home thing gets lifted? Where's the first place you're going to go? Where are you going to travel to? Where are you going to eat out? What movie are you going to see? Hit me up there. I want to see what you're thinking about and what you're looking forward to when all of this is over. That's it for me. We are going to have tons more episodes coming your way. Cameron Mills is going to join us. We're going to talk about all kinds of things. The lessons that we've learned from COVID, we're going to talk about some dietary stuff. We're going to talk about some stuff that's in the news right now and some sports as well. That's all coming up. I am Leland Conway. You're listening to The Disruption Zone. Check us out on Apple Podcasts. You can also get us on Google Play. We're on Spreaker and on your iHeartRadio app. Just search The Disruption Zone and download it, and you will have me and my guests delivered to your pocket. It'll be awesome. You'll love it. Trust me. Thanks for listening. Oh, and thanks to my friend Neil Kesterson at Dynamics Productions. They provide the music for this program. It's The Disruption Zone.